Good morning, and it is my privilege to be here, and I hope that this lesson is beneficial to all of us. And my apologies for being a tad minutes late as for the first hour. My routine now is such that I do my daily Bible reading on Facebook Live at 6 a.m. every morning, Monday through Friday. And then we do it at 9 a.m. Saturday. And there on that day, I am with my wife at the farmer's market. So I do it from the farmer's market. The other days, Monday through Friday, I have to get it done so that I can be at my other job by 8:30 up in North Topeka and, well, all over Topeka and other places. Then my Sunday schedule is very, very busy because I begin with an 8 a.m. study, which I did just before coming here. That usually goes from 8 to 8:30. Well, I had to shave it to 8:20 for my stopping point this morning and then get in the car and come here. And that's how that worked out. And I had to do that because there's no other place to put that one right now. I have another study in the afternoon, which I'll hustle from here to get to. We do the scheduled reading for today at 2:30 this afternoon. Then we go right into our other Bible study. That Bible study is on Revelation. It used to be Wednesday morning at 10, and now it's compressed with the reading time in the afternoon on Sunday. And I'm also in and out of virtual meetings and Bible studies all through the day today, and all through the week, other spots as well. My dad has me teaching Sunday afternoons now for the Veneta congregation on the canonization of the Scripture. So that's kind of how things are going right now. You have with you, and I want to thank Brother Paul for making this available, a song which pertains to the lesson today. It is taken from, adapted from Micah chapter 5, verse 2. I thought we would quickly run through it at the top here and then try to run through it maybe a couple more times at the bottom of the thoughts. What I plan to share with you is an overview today of the book of Micah, just an overview of the book of Micah. So this song I actually wrote when I was on a plane on my way to visit my folks. So if you want to know the starting pitch, just think of the roar of the plane's engine and it will kind of get you there for that first note. I'll just run through it one time here. O Bethlehem, house of bread, of you the prophet Micah said, though small by man's estimation, from you will come he who is the one. His goings forth are from everlasting, yes, from of old, from everlasting, yes, from of old, and from everlasting. All right, we'll say a little bit more about that and sing it maybe through a couple more times before we conclude today. So the book of Micah, the title of this book, of course, is derived from the prophet who, having received the word of the Lord, was commissioned to proclaim it. Micah, of course, is the name of that prophet and the name of this book. This prophet shared this name with some others that we read about in the Old Testament. If you want to take a quick jog over to the book of Judges for just a moment, let's go to Judges chapter 17. And I'll read verse 1 there, Judges 17, verse 1. There was a man of the hill country of Ephraim whose name was Micah. This is Micah who we read about that kind of gives us a sense of how things were going in the days of the judges. 2 Chronicles 13 is another one. 2 Chronicles 13, verse 2. He reigned for 3 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Micaiah, the daughter of Uriel of Gibeah. So we have a woman who has this name in that passage. And then finally, another example in Jeremiah. If you go to Jeremiah 36 and verse 11, Jeremiah 36, verse 11. When Micaiah, the son of Gemariah, son of Shaphan, heard all the words of the Lord from the scroll. So some others that share this same name. Micah is actually the short form of the name. The fuller form that we noticed was Micaiah, or sometimes with the H as well, as in Micaiah for the Hebrew. And it means, who is like the Lord? Who is like the Lord? And so the prophet uses a play on his own name in the 7th chapter of Micah, verse 18. Micah 7, verse 18. Who is a God like you, pardoning iniquity and passing over transgression for the remnant of his inheritance? The prophet makes a play on his own name there in that passage. As to this prophet, this author, and the place and the date of the writing of this book, well, the first verse establishes Micah as the author, and beyond that, there is little known about him. His parentage is not given, but his name suggests godly heritage. The first verse also tells us where the prophet was from, Moresheth. This is a village in the Shephelah of Judah, also known as Moresheth Gath, located in the foothills. That is what Shephelah means in Hebrew, foothills of Judah, approximately 25 miles southwest of Jerusalem, on the border of Judah and Philistia near Gath. Anybody remember a story about a big, scary guy that came from there? Goliath of Gath. This was, and we'll talk about this some more, and this pertains to the name and the some things we'll say about the song and that passage, Micah 5 and 2. This was a highly productive agricultural area. So Micah, like Amos, and in terms of the minor prophets, I love the minor prophets, and if I were to say which one was my favorite, it would be Amos, and then Micah would be my second. But they were alike in that they were country residents who were removed by God. Excuse me, I'm going to say something more before I say chosen. Chosen is the word I want, by God. Removed from, what I want to notice that they were removed from, was that they were removed from the national politics and the national religion that was found in the city of Jerusalem. That's the point I wanted to make there. Then the part about being called by God, which in the third chapter of the book, verse 8, we read about Micah. But as for me, I am filled with power, with the Spirit of the Lord, and with justice and might to declare to Jacob his transgression and to Israel his sin. Remember that Amos said, I was just minding my own business, dressing the figs and watching over the sheep, and you called me Lord. Out of the country, these men were taken. Micah was like that too. He was a country resident. He was removed from all of the things going on, all of the corruption in the city. But he was sent to those cities, Jerusalem and some in Israel, to prophesy. But we really know virtually nothing about the man Micah. He is, however, one of the few Old Testament prophets to be cited by name in the writings of others. Jeremiah 26:18 is a citation of Micah chapter 3, verse 12. And the significance of this is that Micah's book was recognized as canonical by the time that Jeremiah was doing his work. And also the nature of the citation itself suggests that there was a consensus by that time that Micah had been a true prophet. Habakkuk 2 and 12 is a modification of Micah 3:10. Micah 4:2 through 3 is so nearly identical to Isaiah chapter 2, verses 2 through 4, that we cannot tell who is citing from whom. Micah 1 and 1 also tells us that Micah preached during the reigns of Jotham, 750 to 731 B.C., Ahaz, 731 to 715 B.C., and Hezekiah 715 to 686 BC. Micah 1 and 1. The word of the Lord that came to Micah of Moresheth in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, which he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem. So this would place the work of Micah during the second half of the 8th century BC, making him a contemporary of Isaiah and Hosea and Amos. His indictments of social injustice and religious corruption renew the theme of Amos, who was in the mid-8th century BC, and his contemporaries Hosea in the north, again 755 to about 710 BC, and then in the south, Isaiah 739 to 690 BC. And this fits what is known about the character of Ahaz that we read about in 2 Kings 16, 10 through 18, and his son Hezekiah prior to his spiritual reformations that we read about in 2 Chronicles 29 and also in 31 verse 1. Now I'm rattling off some of those references. I have a couple of corrections I need to make to this little packet I'm reading from here, but I will be sending that to Brother Paul. I already did send. Did I send the whole thing or just the song? I think I just sent you the song. So I'll send you the whole packet after I do those corrections, and then it can be available to anyone that would like. Something we need to notice here, look at verse 6 of chapter 1. Therefore I will make Samaria a heap in the open country, a place for planting vineyards, and I will pour down her stones into the valley and uncover her foundations. His reference to the imminent fall of Samaria here clearly positions him before 722 BC. And so we have Micah around 735 to 710 BC is how we figure this. Now, Micah primarily served the southern kingdom of Judah, but he also addressed the northern kingdom of Israel and predicted that fall of Samaria, which happened in 722 BC. His message was aimed in particular at greedy and oppressive landowners. Take a look at chapter 2, the first five verses of the book of Micah. Woe to those who devise wickedness and work evil on their beds. When the morning dawns, they perform it because it is in the power of their hand. They covet fields and seize them, and houses and take them away. They oppress a man and his house, a man and his inheritance. Therefore, thus says the Lord, behold, against this family I am devising disaster, from which you cannot remove your necks. And you shall not walk haughtily, for it will be a time of disaster. In that day they shall take up a taunt song against you, and moan bitterly, and say, we are utterly ruined. He changes the portion of my people, how he removes it from me. To an apostate he allots our field. Therefore you will have none to cast the line by lot in the assembly of the Lord. Now these landowners supported Israel's corrupt religious and political system. Those leaders of Israel who had led the nation into moral decay. Follow the money, and you will follow the corruption. That's always the way it is. Some cultural facts and highlights here to consider. The background of this book is the same as that found in the earlier portions of the book of Isaiah. Biblical passages covering this period are 2 Kings chapter 15, verse 32 through 20, and also 32 through chapter 20, verse 21, and then 2 Chronicles chapters 27 through 32, and Isaiah particularly chapter 7, chapter 20, chapters 36 through 39. Now there were several significant events historically that occurred during this time period. In 734 to 732 BC, Tiglath-Pileser III of Assyria led a military campaign against Aram, or Syria, And that included all of Gilead and most of Galilee. Galilee was referenced in the life of Jesus being looked at today, Brother Bill, in the book of Luke there. In 722 to 721, Samaria fell. And the northern kingdom was conquered by Assyria. In 701, Judah turned and joined in a revolt against Assyria, but was overthrown by King Sennacherib and his army. Jerusalem, however, was spared. Micah condemned the sin of Judah and anticipated the divine judgment against this nation. Let's look at chapter 3, verses 1 through 4. And I said, "Hear, you heads of Jacob, and rulers of the house of Israel, is it not for you to know justice? You who hate the good and love the evil, who tear the skin from off my people and their flesh from off their bones, who eat the flesh of my people and flay their skin from off them and break their bones in pieces and chop them up like meat in a cauldron, like flesh in a pot. Then they will cry to the Lord, but he will not answer them. He will hide his face from them at that time because they have made their deeds evil." Also notice in chapter 4, verse 10. Micah 4, verse 10. "Writhe and groan, O daughter of Zion, like a woman in labor. For now you shall go out from the city and dwell in the open country. You shall go to Babylon. There you shall be rescued. There the Lord will redeem you from the hand of your enemies." A very interesting verse there in the context of all of this. Micah condemned the sin of Judah. He anticipates their judgment for their sin. Yet he also forecasts her ultimate triumph over all the nations of the earth. And that's where the second part, especially verse 10 there of chapter 4, comes in. And read on there in chapter 4 down to the end of that chapter. "Now many nations are assembled against you, saying, 'Let her be defiled, and let our eyes gaze upon Zion.' But they do not know the thoughts of the Lord. They do not understand his plan, that he has gathered them as sheaves to the threshing floor. Arise and thresh, O daughter of Zion, for I will make your horn iron, and I will make your hooves bronze, and you shall beat in pieces many peoples, and shall devote their gain to the Lord, their wealth to the Lord of the whole earth." So, their destruction and yet their triumph. And in this, Micah was not simply being patriotic, looking forward to their victory over these Gentiles. To the contrary, he expected Israel in the long term to be a blessing to the nations. In chapter 4, verses 2 and 3, "Many nations shall come and say, 'Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways, and that we may walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem.'" In short, Micah was advancing a theology which dealt with the current dilemma of the chosen people of God and the house of David falling under judgment. But far from implying failure of the covenant promise, this very judgment would be the means by which God would fulfill those covenants. What was it that they were guilty of? I mean, what was one of the things that's talked about the most? All those other terrible things go with it, but idolatry was their sin, serving other gods. When they came back from Babylon, were they still doing that? No. They were purged of that, and there was a nation ready now to produce the Messiah. As you read this book, be aware of the alternating oracles of doom and hope in this prophetic book. Such changes in perspective are common in these kinds of prophetic works. Here's a question for you. Do you look at this and do you see this merely as a mood swing of the author? Or is there something more going on here? Is this not the faithful representation of the message given to the prophet by God? Consider the kindness and the sternness of God. If you will, look at Romans chapter 11 and verse 22. Romans chapter 11, verse 22. Note then the kindness and the severity of God. Severity toward those who have fallen, but God's kindness to you, provided you continue in His kindness. Otherwise, you too will be cut off. And what is the context of that verse there? That is the from chapters 9 through 12, the context of the new definition of Israel being a spiritual definition, and those who are not faithful, who were part of the ethnic, physical Israel, they were broken off of that olive tree. And these Gentiles who were not ethnic Jews were added to that olive tree. And the warning to those Gentiles, don't feel important, like it can't happen to you, because just as easily as you were grafted in, you can be taken out of this. The goodness and the severity of God. Consider the nature of other prophecies like Micah's, the doom and then the return, the prosperity after the devastation. Everyone will dwell under their vine and under their fig tree. Did you know that going barefoot was a sign of mourning, as was wearing sackcloth? And it's possible that Micah was actually walking barefoot, wearing just a sackcloth, loincloth, as he did so. Chapter 1, verse 8. For this I will lament and wail, I will go stripped and naked, I will make lamentation like the jackals and mourning like the ostriches. In the Hebrew for parting gifts is translated wedding gifts in 1 Kings 9:16. Jerusalem would give up Moresheth-Gath to Assyria as a father gives a wedding gift to his daughter when she marries. Micah chapter 1, verse 14. Therefore you shall give parting gifts to Moresheth-Gath. The houses of Achzib shall be a deceitful thing to the kings of Israel. And seers, as we have it in verse 7 of chapter 3, the seers shall be disgraced and the diviners put to shame. Those are old and other terms for prophets. Plowshare in chapter 4, verse 3. He shall judge between many peoples. This is messianic, this prophecy. He shall judge between many peoples and shall decide for strong nations far away. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. And Isaiah is verbatim with that same those same words there. But a plowshare. Well, not necessarily a plowshare like we might think of it in these modern times. It's certainly not a John Deere. And it's not even like that instrument I have out in my garden, antique, that is a wheel with handles, and behind that is some prongs that dig into the earth when you push it through and you can do a little cultivating between rows. Not even that modern. Basically, their plowshare was just an iron shaft that was strapped to a bar of wood and it would just tear up the soil, but could easily be turned into a sword. And Micah does the reverse and says that the sword is going to be turned into a plowshare. The difference of the nature of the kingdom of Christ. In chapter 4, verse 4, but they shall sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid, for the mouth of the Lord of hosts has spoken. This is the picture of proverbial peace, security, contentment. 7, even 8, is a figurative for an indefinite number. A hopeful element was always part of these laments. Chapter 7, verse 7, "But as for me, I will look to the Lord. I will wait for the God of my salvation. My God will hear me." There's many different themes that are presented in the book of Micah, but I'm going to overlook those. You'll have those. There's also a timeline in this package that you can look at. But let's look at two words as we begin to wrap it up here this morning. The word restoration and the word justice. Chapter 7, verse 9, "I will hear the indignation of the Lord because I have sinned against him until he pleads my cause and executes judgment for me. He will bring me out to the light. I shall look upon his vindication." Micah declared that after judgment, God would mercifully forgive and restore his people, bringing them back from the exile in Babylon, chapter 4, verse 10. Restoring Jerusalem's dominion, chapter 4, verses 8 and 13. Then Micah asks a simple question. What does the Lord require of you? What does the Lord require of you? Look at chapter 6 of the book and verse 8. "He has told you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God?" That is the way that God's people should walk. Israel had failed to live up to this divine expectation, and the nation would suffer the horrible consequences. So a brief outline of the book. We read about judgment against Israel and Judah in the first three chapters. We have Israel and Judah having hope in chapters 4 and 5. We have the Lord's case against Israel in chapter 6. We have misery turning to triumph in chapter 7. And we have Micah chapter 5, verse 2, and the song. And we'll look at that again. Before we do so, though, why have I called it House of Bread? Why did I give this title to this song? The prophet, some 750 years before it occurred, predicted that the little podunk town where the Messiah was going to be born. What was the name of that town? Bethlehem. That means house of bread. Beit Lechem in Hebrew. There's a saying about bread being the staff of life. Anyone ever watch the movie Fiddler on the Roof? The scene where Tevye has gone after clapping hands with Lazarwolf, and they've made an agreement that Lazarwolf is going to become the husband of one of Tevye's daughters. And they're at the bar and they're celebrating and they're saying, "To life, lechaim." Life, chaim, and bread. Chem, very similar in the Hebrew. House of bread, Beit Lechem, Bethlehem. Then there's another name also in the passage. In 5 and 2, it says another name there, Ephrathah. Well, what is that? Well, that's an older designation for the same place, and it means fertility. Remember, this was an agricultural area. So that's why. Now, the verse itself speaks of the littleness of Bethlehem, hence the littleness, the shortness of this song. And yet in the little bitty verse, this one little verse, speaking to the little bitty Bethlehem, speaks of the eternality of the Messiah. So that's why the other words about from of old, from of everlasting. And we repeat that line because it's worthy of repetition. So let's do the song one more time. O Bethlehem, house of bread, of you the prophet Micah said, though small by man's estimation, From you will come he who is the one. His goings forth are from everlasting. Yes, from of old, from everlasting. Yes, from of old and from everlasting. And now we will offer the invitation and sing the song that Brother Kevin has selected for that as we stand.